prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The Truth Revolution.
Welcome to Truth Revolution. I am Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff, as always, and this is where faith and reason meet. It is Truth Revolution. Welcome to it.
Welcome to Truth Revolution.
Got a really great show lined up for you today.
We had a really good show last week with Clay Jones.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump and do one of these articles that we often do, the anti-Christianity articles. We like to take these and dissect them and say, okay, what is this person's reason for not being a Christian? And let's see if it's valid.
You know, is it okay? I mean, some of these people just really seem to not have a very well thought out exit strategy from Christianity. It's almost like, you know, I don't feel like believing in Christianity. Here's my reason. And it just almost seems like it's just a blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Well, this guy has, we have 20 pages here.
Yeah, I see that.
So it's hopefully crazy. This will be much more thought out.
Right.
But I think what you're trying to get at is they may be processing this stuff in their own heart and head, but they haven't necessarily processed it with someone who knows answers to these issues.
Right, right.
And that's a big possibility.
Yeah, and one of the big problems is that there's a bunch of places to get wrong answers out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and some people, I mean, you know, Dawkins, Hitchens, they all sound very convincing.
Or even aside from the atheists who sound very convincing, there's bad Christian sites out there like Dr. Dino and and I'm not going to say some of the other ones, but like there are some places that just give profoundly disappointing intellectual answers. And hopefully we're not going to be one of those places. We're also going to do Bible contradiction today. We're going to answer those. We got a listener question, really interesting listener question, talking about a show that we did months ago.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get to that. But let's go ahead and jump in. We're just going to start reading through this article. It's from xchristian.net.
Okay.
And this is an article by a guy named Michael Runyon. The article itself is a couple years old, but I really thought what he was saying resonated. I've heard these things repeated again and again from different people I've talked to.
Right.
So let's just go ahead and start reading it, and we'll pause every now and then and reflect on what he's talked about.
All right. He says, my path out of Christianity began 30 years ago when I realized that evolution was a fact.
Okay.
That we evolved from very simple organisms that lived 4 billion years ago. I wondered why a God would use such a long, convoluted process to produce the human or the desired human product, a process that included a 160 million year reign of the dinosaurs and the countless suffering of animals and the starved that starved to death or were eaten alive. The way I got out of that conundrum was to suppose that God allowed everything to happen in its own, and that only when intelligent beings evolved did he decide to intervene. And that perhaps he did the same on other planets where intelligent life evolved.
All right, well, let's just take that paragraph. That's paragraph one out of 20 pages.
Right.
I doubt we're going to make it through this today.
No.
But let's just start at the beginning. When he discovered evolution was a fact was the beginning of the problem for him. He says, when organisms lived 4 billion years ago, why would God make such a long, convoluted process to come up to humanity? Well, let's just, we don't necessarily say we don't say that God used evolution to create humanity. We think humanity was a special creation.
Right.
However, let's just give him that point.
Okay.
Let's just say, okay, we'll assume that God used evolution to get to humanity. Okay.
Okay.
You're looking at me.
I'm not really comfortable with that.
But let's just say that that's what happened.
Okay.
And he says, why would God use such a long, convoluted process to produce the desired human product, a process that included 160 million year reign of the dinosaurs? Okay. There is really, really good reason for these animals to have existed. And there's really good reason for humanity not to live until we do.
Right.
The Earth's atmosphere, the way plate tectonics have worked, the Earth is ideally suited for human life right now.
Yes, correct. And the thing is that a lot of the animal life that happened before we came on the scene was basically planet cultivation.
Exactly.
You know?
I don't want to go super in depth on this. We have done some other shows on this. So maybe go to truthrevolution.tv, type in dinosaurs, rawr, or something.
Yeah, it was like God's Genesis project from Star Trek.
Right.
Wow.
But we...
That's crazy. Genesis?
He's maybe misunderstanding one of God's attributes, and mm-hmm. that is patience. God...
Oh, yeah.
God invented the idea of a process.
Right.
Think about it from God's perspective. Okay, let's say you are God, and everything you can do right now. Done. Create a universe? Boom. It's done. Right. You want to create another universe? Boom. You're done. Whatever you want to do. You want to create a universe with 120 billion trillion years of history? Boom. It's done. You just did it. The idea that there's a process that takes time mm-hmm. was an invention by God. He came up with this. What if I did something that didn't happen instantaneously,
right.
but it took time to happen? That was right. God's idea.
Right. And it's not necessarily that God has to be in a rush to do everything. Why do people think that?
When Jesus was waiting in a town one time, people came to him and said, a guy named Lazarus, your friend, is sick. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay. And he waited. Mm-hmm. He waited until Lazarus died. And then he didn't instantly transport himself there. No, he walked there. It was a day to 3 days journey. So he took time to walk there. And then after he walked, he got there and he didn't go, since I know everything, let me just tune in. I can see where his grave is. Don't tell me. He said, tell me, where have you put him? He asks people right. questions. He walks. He waits.
Right. A process.
He basically. Takes the process. Mm-hmm. Enjoying the process is part of God's nature. This is what he does. It was an idea right. he came up with. So the fact that God would take 160 million years to let dinosaurs reign, the earth develop, plate tectonics to take form, the atmosphere to be formed just properly, isn't surprising when you know the character of God. Right. This is something he came up with.
Right. It wouldn't be too much to think about that maybe the process is to actually make God be glorified even more in the end result.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of interesting. Now, why did it take 4 billion years? I mean, when you like a process, you like a process, man. Right. Let's do it.
Well, it's the simple fact of the matter is that God lives outside of our universe and is not affected by time. So 4 billion years to God is nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
The blink of an eye
is nothing. Right. So that really isn't as big of a deal as mm-hmm. he was trying to make it.
All right. Continuing on, he says, for a while I was satisfied with that, but then I started to realize other problems. Modern humans have existed for 100,000 years, so why did God wait 95,000 years before he made contact?
Okay, let me jump in there.
Okay, both feet.
He did not wait 95,000 years to make contact. Right. Adam and Eve, if you're going from a biblical worldview, which he says that he was a Christian,
right.
if you're going from a biblical worldview, God was in contact with Adam and Eve. Doesn't say in the Bible that Adam and Eve existed 5,000 years ago.
Right.
Doesn't say that. We've gone over this a bunch of times. So if you take the timeline that Homo sapiens came into being 100 to 200,000 years ago.
Right. He was in contact with the very first ones.
The very first ones. So he didn't wait 95,000 years before making contact. He right. made contact at the beginning. Adam and Eve knew him. Then their children knew God. Cain even had a conversation with God.
Right. And now, are we supposing that he's talking about the contact with Abraham?
Yeah, he probably is talking about the contact with Abraham, but God was still in contact with Adam and Eve, and that loss of contact that did happen mm-hmm. wasn't done because God was like, all right, I'm going to sprinkle the earth with some humans, and I'm out.
Right, I'm going on vacation. I'll be back in a while.
I'll be back in 95,000 years.
Right.
No, that's not what happened.
Right.
Humanity walked away from God.
Yes.
I mean, if we remember, Adam and Eve were there with God, having good fellowship. They sinned, and then God had to remove them from the garden as a consequence right. for their sin. Cain had a conversation with God, then he murdered his brother, and then he walked away.
Right. Man walked away.
Period. Nations overall eventually walked further and further away from God. This right. is just what happened. Mm-hmm. So when God makes contact with Abraham, it's not as though they hadn't heard anything for 95,000 years. God was in contact with people all around. In fact, there was a priest... That Abraham gave 10% of his income to. Right.
Melchizedek.
Yes, Melchizedek. Yeah. And so this priest was in contact with God. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no scriptural reason to think that God was completely absent from humanity for 95,000 right. years. He was obviously in contact from Adam and Eve all the way till Melchizedek. He just chose Abraham specifically to get a job done.
Right. Okay. He continues on and says, and why was that contact made with only a small tribe in the Middle East? The problem was further exacerbated by the question why God would choose a certain people over another in the first place, while ignoring the many vibrant civilizations that existed all over the world at that time.
Okay. There's Well, that's not true. Again, God didn't just choose and favor one. In fact, if you read the New Testament, again, this guy said he was a Christian, so he, the New Testament says, Paul writes, God does not show favoritism.
Right.
He says that. And so God was not showing favoritism to the Jews. God was using the Jews to bring blessings to the rest of the world.
Right.
God says, Abraham, through you, I will bless all nations, not one, all nations.
Right. Amen.
Right. And so the point was, Abraham, I'm going to use you. I'm going to bring a Messiah. I'm going to bring blessings to you. And the people who hear my voice, who see me working, I'm going to bless them too, if they trust me.
Right. Let's be honest. Abraham, basically, he submitted to God, you know, and not only that, but when the children of Israel, or when the Hebrew people were in Egypt, they were pretty much the low of the low. And all the other nations, it is said in the history of the world, in all the different nations' histories, that those nations were bad. You know, it says in the Bible, and it is corroborated through historical documents, that these nations were not good nations.
Are you talking about what we talked about last week?
Yeah, I'm talking about Egypt. I'm talking about the Canaanites. Uh-huh. You know, these nations, God would not use these nations because they were directly in opposition to God.
They did things like child sacrifice. Yes. They did things like idol worship.
Mm-hmm.
They heard of the Israelite God, the real God, and they would reject him.
Right.
And so they had opportunity to experience and know the real God. God was not saying, hey, I'm with you, Abraham. No matter what anyone else does, you know what? Forget him. Forget him. Right. It's just you and me. That's not what was happening.
Right.
So God chose Abraham, and anyone who blessed Abraham, God blessed.
Right.
Anyone who saw that God was working there, God blessed. God was able to, what God wanted to use. So right. he wasn't doing what this author suggested, which was to reject all the other nations.
Right. He goes on to talk about how, you know, God basically helped the Israelites dominate all the other nations, commanding them to kill the women and children. Why would God, who had built an entire universe, become involved in such a cruel and petty absurdity?
Well, we talked about that last week, so we're not going to go into that a ton. But really, what they were doing was evil.
Right.
I mean, his next sentence is, when looking at the other atrocities ascribed to God in the Old Testament, I realized that no real God would ever act in that way. No. I tell you who did real evil was Canaan.
Right.
And those nations. It's funny how people will, at one point, and I don't know if this guy ever says something like this, but people will at one hand complain that God doesn't step in to stop evil. Well, why do things like 9/11 happen? Why do things like children being murdered happen?
Right.
But when God steps into a nation that is murdering their children and destroys them,
you can't
like,
do that.
They're like, oh, well, why would God destroy a nation?
Right.
Well, you can't have it both ways.
You like, owe me a Coke, by the way.
I don't know you nothing.
I mean, he says he was impressed by the quote from Richard Dawkins. The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction, jealous and proud of it. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynist, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
Wow.
Whoa.
What you just said, everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
But he talks about there are scriptures that back everything up.
Let's not. Okay, hold on. This Richard Dawkins quote.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy. Okay, like we just went over the reasons that God might destroy a nation,
right.
The reasons why God might harm people because he's executing judgment. Now you need to go listen to last week's, and we're gonna learn a lot about this quote of Richard Dawkins and why it's just way off base. All right, we're gonna come back. We're gonna keep going through this article. We're gonna answer some Bible contradictions. A Bible contradiction.
Yeah.
Maybe get to a listener Bible question. And you got to get out to truthrevolution.tv and Revolution Church.
That's right. Revolution.tv's got old shows, truth shots, and stuff like that. And Revolution Church has service at 9 and 11.
Every Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So you got to come on out. Doesn't matter what you wear. We don't really care. Easter was a couple weeks ago. If you came out for that, come on back. If you didn't come out for Easter,
come on
check
anyway,
it out right now.
There you go.
Sunday mornings, 9 and 11. Truth Revolution's at truthrevolution.tv, and you can find stuff about Revolution Church at revo.church, R-E-V-O.church. All right, we're going to be right back. Don't go anywhere. We're going to finish this article.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Jesus wasn't the only Messiah.
That's what they say. Sabbatai Zevi was a 17th century Jewish teacher who claimed to be the Messiah.
A messenger came before him, as predicted.
His tomb was empty shortly after his death.
And there are miracle stories. Once he cursed a church and it sank into the ground.
Is this legit?
Well, his forerunner, Nathan, actually says he didn't do miracles.
Oh. And though some people claim his tomb was empty, nobody saw him resurrected.
In fact, Nathan says that Sabbatai is still sleeping.
The biggest problem, he was captured by Muslims who forced him upon punishment of death to say that he was not the Messiah and that people should convert to Islam.
And Zevi did what the Muslims requested, denying that he was the Messiah and telling people to convert to Islam.
That should tell us something.
You think?
If someone suggests there was another Messiah, make sure to look into all the facts before flipping out.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same, to be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
A church must follow valid doctrines. Otherwise, the body of Christ may be atrophied.
We must learn to think correctly because thinking wrongly provides the church with a foundation that is insubstantial.
Even small matters of wrong doctrine can put cracks in the foundational beliefs of the body.
A foundation built on false doctrine would not be able to support the church through persecution or hard times, and here's where a danger can be.
Summation thought is Christian ease, or the way Christians generally speak about theology.
In general, there's nothing wrong with summation thought. For instance, someone can remark that the Holy Spirit is inside us, and generally that's true.
Systematic thought, however, defines clearly what is being thought and believed. God is omnipresent and therefore inside everyone, even non-believers.
Yet he's not physical. Inside must denote a type of influence and not strictly a physical location.
You see, generally, summation thought is right, but we must be careful not to believe that it expresses all the nuances of true doctrine.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. You know, God cares more about what's on the inside of a person than on the outside.
That's right. Join us Sunday morning at 9 or 11 a.m. online at revo.church.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Most people here hadn't been for a long time, if ever, so you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11 a.m.
online at revo.church.
That's R-E-V-O.church.
Revolution!
Truth Revolution.
I'm a liar, Dave.
Yeah. And we're talking about why is God so mean?
I'm a liar. I said we're going to finish this article.
Well, we will certainly give it a stab, but I don't think that's going to happen.
What I mean by finish, you got to take it in context.
Okay, here we
dialect.
Go. Nice.
Wait, what I mean by finish is we're going to be done with it.
Right.
When we're done with it, we're done with it.
Right.
All right. So let's get down to the Noah Ark thing here.
Okay.
At the bottom here.
The story of Noah's Ark never happened. He said, "Wow, what do you say about that, Jeff?"
Well,
But it was written as if it were a fact, so it made me wonder. What other elements of the Bible that, unlike Noah, seemed plausibly true, but nonetheless fiction? What is even more telling is my observation that the story of Noah were true, as many fundamentalist Christians believe.
We're fundamentalists.
Would a God capable of such vicious cruelty be worthy of worship in the first place?
All right, let's talk about this.
All right, hold on.
Yeah, okay. All right, go ahead.
All right.
Dave.
It doesn't matter if God is God. Doesn't matter what God does, he is still going to be worthy of worship regardless, because he is the one that created us. He's the one that created the universe and the earth that we live in. So therefore, he is worthy of worship. He is an uncreated being that created everything.
That is true. As a matter of fact, I mean, as Paul puts it, we are clay in the potter's hands.
Right.
Doesn't the potter have the right to make one a beautiful work of art and the other an ashtray?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not exactly in the Bible, but it's something like that. You know, that's
right.
Paul's point. Doesn't he have the right to, if he chooses, to smash his clay creation? I mean, this is
absolutely.
This is the artist and we are the artwork. We have a really small view of God.
Right.
As always bound by who we are or what our rules are.
Right. We like to think that we own ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is not the truth. We are actually the property of God.
Mm-hmm.
So and he is free to do with us as he wills.
And to be real honest, I think most people get that.
Yeah.
I think most people who aren't even sure what they think about Jesus or church would probably say, well, look, if there's a God, then he's God, and right. And he can do what he wants.
Right.
Maybe they're confused as to why God would do something, but they don't necessarily question whether he's God or not and whether or not he has a right to do mm-hmm. that. I just don't think most people have a problem with that, to be real honest. But the story of Noah's Ark never happened? How does he know this?
Well, it seems like, you know, it's the child's story. You know, it's plastered on the wallpaper of a lot of children's bedrooms. It's basically painted into this story that's just a fable for people to learn from.
Of course, it's told to children in every culture in the world, mm-hmm. which might imply something.
Right.
Might imply that there's a common historical event that took place, which every culture in the world came from. Noah's Ark, very possible that this is a real story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure why he says it's not a real story. Why not?
Right.
How does he know that? In fact, we had Hugh Ross on from Reasons to Believe, and we talked about Noah's Ark. You can go to our website, truthrevolution.tv, and look up Noah's Ark, mm-hmm. and you'll find information about that movie about Noah and what the real Noah's Ark was like, why we think it might have been just a local flood in just Noah's area,
right?
Because we don't think there were kangaroos on the Ark.
Right. You'll find out how the kangaroo actually made it back to Australia.
His big legs were made for swimming.
Right.
So, all right, let's keep going on.
All right. Where was I
at? You know what we're going to do?
Let's do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Bible contradiction today. Was Jesus' first sermon on a plane or was it on a mount?
It was on a plane, a 747.
Nice. Matthew 5, 1 through 2. I'm going to prove you wrong here.
Okay.
And seeing the multitudes, he went up to the end of the mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him. That's the King James Version. So basically, mountain's on a mountain. Luke 6, 17 through 20 says, and he came down with them and stood in the plain. And the company of disciples and a great multitude of people came to hear him. And he lifted up his eyes on his disciples and said, ...
Yeah, okay.
Which is really important.
So. Was he on a mountain or was he on a plane?
Right.
Well, see, for credibility, if we're just going to read any document, we need to assume that the author knows what he's saying, and that if there's a discrepancy like this, I'm not just automatically going, idiots!
Right.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, well, I'm going to try to figure out what's going on. One possibility is that these were actually two different sermons. Mm-hmm. I imagine Jesus traveled in a lot of places.
Yeah.
I imagine he might have made the same points in more than one place.
Yeah, that's true. You know, when I was a kid, I went and saw Billy Graham at one of these big stadiums.
Yeah.
You know? But then I heard that he was at a church somewhere.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that because I saw him at the stadium.
It's a stadium.
Right?
It's a stadium, not the church.
Right.
And he could have given the same message at the stadium and the church.
Could have.
Well, which one was it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a possibility. But E for early meeting. We're going to go back to the Greek.
Okay.
In our cracked acronym, C-R-A-C-K-E-D. Mm-hmm. The E stands for early meaning in manuscripts. We're going to go back to the early meaning, the Greek word. The Greek word in Luke 6:11 is actually probably better translated this way. He went down with them and stood on a level place.
Which you can have on a mountain.
You can have a level place on a mountain. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Greek word can be translated as plain or level place either way. So King James Version isn't wrong.
Okay.
But it makes more sense if this were the same event to translate that as a level place. So they went up to the mountain. He went up there with them. He came down to a place that was level and then started to teach them.
Right.
Really simple explanation.
Yeah.
So Matthew's just saying, hey, yeah, he went up into a mountain. And then Luke is just saying, well, he kind of came down to where there was like this place he could stand to teach everybody, because you're not going to stand on top of a pointy rock to preach your sermon.
Yeah.
And so that's the answer for Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
All right.
All right.
Where do we go from here?
We got 6 minutes left.
Okay, well, you know, see, he also recognized in this article that the real God would not require animals to be sacrificed for his gratification.
Okay.
Or demand that people would who work on the Sabbath be put to death, or disobedient children should be killed. You know, I would actually posit that God knew exactly what he was doing before a lot of things happened. We're talking about shadows and types of things to come. Yeah, when we talk about the animal sacrifices and stuff like that, there's a bigger overarching story here.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about K, knit together.
If absolutely.
Yeah.
If he's got a problem with animal sacrifice, he should have a real big problem with...
Yeah, with Jesus dying on the cross.
Come you know? On, people.
You know, God sent his own son to sacrifice him, you know? It doesn't get more personal than that.
The whole point of animal sacrifice was that people should go, this is kind of screwed up. That something has to die to pay for my sin. Yeah, it is.
Right.
And guess what? Jesus is going to die for your sin. That's exceptionally screwed up.
Right.
Sin is really screwed up. It's
Amen.
An offense to God. In our society, and we talked about this last week as well, in our society, we've kind of dumbed down evil. Like, we don't think sin is really that bad.
Right.
It's like a, well, we made a mistake. It's better a different way. But no, sin is bad. It's evil. It's messed up. So why would someone be put to death for sinning? Because it was evil. Why would an animal have to be sacrificed? Because what they did was evil. Something has to pay for sin with death. And it was a foreshadowing, like you said, type and shadows, a foreshadowing to Jesus. But also, types and shadows. He goes on here and talks about different laws in the Old Testament. And we've talked about that before. Just go look up Knit Together, K-N-I-T, Knit Together on the website. And you'll find more information about how the Bible is knit together, the types and shadows, and how these things work.
Right. And animal sacrifice is God kind of saying, like, hey, this is kind of a big deal.
Exactly.
You know?
This is kind of a big deal.
So.
All right. Let's go ahead and do our listener question. You okay with that?
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's go do that.
I got a question.
All right. This is a long question, but we're going to burn right through it if we can.
Vroom.
Okay. I recently found your website after going down a how to answer an atheist rabbit hole a couple of weeks ago. I have really enjoyed listening to your broadcast and have a comment for you regarding the debate review of Ken Ham versus Bill Nye broadcast.
All
Jeff.
Right.
Pastor Jeff started with the 16 million species on Earth figure that Bill Nye gave, and I think the number is a bit dubious, especially as it relates to the discussion. The catalog of life...
What he's talking about here is when Bill Nye... We did this show months ago.
Right.
When Bill Nye debated Ken Ham, Bill Nye said there were... Actually, he said not 16 million. He said there were 100 million species.
Okay.
And what would have to happen is, since Ken Ham thought there was 4,000 years... he was like, well, let's see, 100 million species divided by 4,000 years means there's 25,000 new species every year.
Right. And that's a crazy number.
Like 70 or close to 70 new animals every day.
Right.
That's crazy. So that's what this guy's talking about.
Right.
Now, this guy says 16 million, which is the number I gave. Speed number is a bit dubious. So go ahead.
All right. He says the cataloguoflife.org lists the number of known species to be approximately 1.7 million. The best numbers I can find for that kind of animals that would have been on the ark in terms of species alive today are mammals, 5,500, birds, 10,400, reptiles, 10,000, amphibians, 7,300, and with a total of being 33,200
species.
Yeah. And he says, now I'm not a biologist or a mathematician for that matter, but 8 to 17 new species every year spread out over at least 1,000 kinds seems like a reasonable number to me, or at the very least, it is not quite the death blow to young Earth creationism that 11 new species per day would be.
Okay, so plainly, I said that Bill Nye gave a death blow to young Earth creationism on that show. I went back and checked. I said, this is the death blow to young Earth creationism to have 11 new species being created every day.
Right.
Because that's how many new species would have to exist if the Earth is only 4,000 years old. There have to be 11 new ones every single day because of the number of species that exist. He did some good research here. So what's interesting is I did check his math. I checked out using the numbers that he gave. I would agree that this isn't the death blow to young Earth creationism that I stated during the original show.
Right.
If, you know, if his numbers are correct, if there were a million species now and only 4,000 years, it would be difficult to explain. But, I think the only thing I would point out is that he forgot to count insects, which Ken Ham would say insects would have been on the ark because it was worldwide, which would be another million species. There's 10 million or 10 million species of insects. So, it's not quite the death blow to young Earth creationism. I still think it kind of presents a little bit of a challenge for him. But anyway, thanks for listening today. That went fast.
It did. We need to do an hour.
We're going to link to this. We're going to link to this article on our website.
Okay.
Listener, if you would log in and check this article out, send us some of your thoughts and questions and challenges. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, you know, if you want to send us something, I mean, just do it via the website, and man, we'll get to your question.
TruthRevolution.tv. We'd love to do something sometime where we just do some listener questions all show long.
Right.
So send in your questions, your thoughts, your challenges, your ugly pictures of me and Dave. TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church.